is A22-0677, Sandy Goldsmith Becker, now known as Sandy Scroggs Goldsmith, petitioner respondent versus Leon L. Becker, appellant. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. This hearing is taking place over Zoom, but we are making an audio recording only, which will be posted later on our website. Counsel, if you're ready and your clients, if they're attending, are here, then we're ready for counsel for appellant. If you could please state the name and the party you represent for the record.
Good morning, Your Honors. Opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson. I represent the appellant Leon Becker in this matter, and we are asking the court today to do a reversal and remand for further findings under the statutory application of a parent moving out of state. This is a pretty simple matter. Really, at the end of the day, this is about a father wanting to spend more time with his daughter and be with his daughter. And he is not able to do that because the child has relocated out of state and he has been given minimum parenting time at this time, despite father asking for more parenting time at the initial motion. Further compounding this issue is the court should not have removed the child from the state because the order that was made in April of 2022 is void for failing to follow the statutory best interest factors under that request. While we recognize that district courts have wide and broad discretion, here there is an error as a matter of law, which is an automatic abuse of discretion. Specifically, under 518.175 subdivision 3, which relates solely to moving a child out of state, a parent cannot move the child out of state without either first a court order or with the consent of the other parent, so long as the other parent has been given parenting time by the decree. In this matter, there was a decree. Father did have parenting time established, so the two modes would be either by court order or by the consent of the other parent. My client did not give his consent. Instead, the respondent went through a court order request. Subdivision or 3 parent B of that same statute specifically states that you do apply the best interest standards. That isn't in dispute. However, there are specific factors that must be found and must be reviewed when making these findings. There are 8 of them.
Counsel, may I interrupt for a moment? I appreciate your argument. I understand where we're at in it. In the 3B, it talks about that the district court needs to it should apply the best interest standard with respect to a move to another state. Best interest, the factors the court must consider include but are not limited to. I appreciate that the findings relate to the best interest in 518.17, the written findings, but the statute that you're referring to says they must consider including the following, and then it lists the other specifically in 518.175. What authority do we look for that tells us, first of all, that there need to be written findings specific to the subdivision 3 considerations?
I agree that there isn't a specific explicit statement that findings must be written. I would ask the court to find that written findings must be written because otherwise, how do we know if the factors have actually been considered? In this case, it's even more blatant that the factors weren't considered because the court doesn't cite the statute and said it even considered those factors.
Counsel, so are you asking us to engraft on the statute a requirement that doesn't exist?
I think it does exist that the factors must be considered. I think a further interpretation is if you are considering those factors and using those factors, you would make findings on those factors. I agree that there is no explicit statement within the statute that says written findings must be made. But I do think the plain language of the statute of you must apply and consider these factors, that written findings would be made to best understand for appellate review. Otherwise, we're in a situation as we are in today where we can't determine whether those factors were considered or not. It is, in my opinion, and frankly, based on the explicit statement of the court order, that the only factors that were considered were the best interest under the other statute, as it was considered more of a parenting time and not a move out of state, even though the child has been relocated outside of the state of Minnesota. That is why we would be asking the courts to say, to find that when you are considering, you are state, you are making those factors, you are putting them in the order, so there would be appropriate review. I don't believe that's going outside this court, and I don't think it goes outside the authority of what the statute was requiring under its own plain language, that it needed to be written down and it needed to be shown that those factors were applied. But even going past that step, we are in an issue where the court didn't follow that. Didn't follow the statutory requirement and applied factors that could be considered, and no one's disputing that because it's including but not limited to. However, the other factors under that subdivision 3 have not been used and have not been considered, and it makes it extremely difficult to decide. I mean, the reason why these are specialty factors and are outside of it are they don't just follow the neat 12 best interest factors categories. Some are similar. Child's preference, that is in both. But the child's relationship with parents and others doesn't necessarily tie to the 12 best interest factors. It can be similar, but it's not the same. The child's
counsel, if I may, but when we look through some of the, I appreciate that the outline of the district court's order findings follow a different series of headings. But if you look at the contents of the findings, I don't see an argument from you, I don't think, that they're all missing. In other words, going through them all. Like, for example, the third factor, which is, considers logistics. I mean, the findings do talk about the transportation of the child's, like, nearing age to drive herself as well. Is the order not reflective of the consideration being made of the factors substantively, each of them, or which ones do you think were not considered by virtue of the outline that the district court used?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would respectfully disagree that factor 3 is logistics. I think factor 3 of subdivision 3 is the feasibility of preserving the child's relationship with the relocating parent. I think that can consider logistics, but I think it's also similar to figuring out how best to maintain the emotional relationship, not just the physical time with the child, but also the actual relationship and maintain that stability. I don't think that is outlined in the best interest factors, and I don't think it's very clear that it could be outlined in the best interest factors because it's not applying the standard in which the statute requires. So maybe
you could point us specifically to what you think the deficiencies in the district court's findings are, as to the factors articulated by 518.175 subdivision 3.
Absolutely. So what I was saying is the factors that I don't think were properly applied and cannot be applied through the best interest in the way the court had done, factor 3, which is the feasibility of preserving the child's relationship with the non-relocating parent, factor 5, whether there is a pattern by the relocating parent to promote or thwart the child's relationship with the other parent, factor 6, whether the relocation will enhance the child and the relocating parent's quality of life. Factor 7, each parent's reasons for opposing or supporting relocation. And I believe factor 8, the safety and welfare of the child or relocate parent relating to domestic abuse. Now, there wasn't domestic abuse in this case. However, I think the reason why these factors are pulled outside of just the standard best interest is because you're looking at it a lens of when you're moving, and we look at these factors, the move itself, what are we doing and how are we creating it? The best interest factors alone are just talking about the parenting time and the custody issues. This is particularly set out to designed to discuss with this move, where you're moving. And these are the factors that would be important outside of just the best interest alone. And that's where I find the deficiency. I don't find in the order, and I did look, but I don't find in the order that there is a clear enough understanding or showing that those factors were even discussed. And again, I would quote the district court by its own statement on page 2 of the order in paragraph 5. It says, the court considers the factors identified in Minnesota Statute 518.17 subdivision 1A. There is nowhere in this order that the court said, along with that, I am considering the other factors required by statute under 518.17 subdivision 3B. If that happened, there is a discussion, again, whether or not written findings are required or not. But in this case, it's so clear that the court only went under these best interest factors and didn't make that consideration. So to try to say that the court did apply it or we can apply them now would be not correct, because the court itself said it didn't apply it, didn't mention it, didn't highlight that the court even thought to review those. And what is most important is when we did this review, my client did supply an affidavit with those factors present. We discussed that those factors should be reviewed, and they weren't. They were not reviewed. And this creates an issue, because the reason why we have the standard, and it's a specific standard, is that we want children not to just move out of state for whatever reason. We want very specific reasons, and we want these reasons to be in the best interest of the child. And the legislature found that the 12 best interest factors are not enough, that there are other considerations that have to be made. And these 8 considerations are very important, and they must be considered. And if they're not, that is an error as a matter of law. And if the court has erred as a matter of law, which we believe it has by statute, then this court should reverse and remand the issue so that this can be corrected. And that if further findings are necessary, we are actually making the decision and reviewing it on the factors that are supposed to be reviewed, not just the factors that were given by this court. I do think...
Because we're running down, your time is running down a little bit. Can we move to the other topic about the motion for parenting time? Can you explain to me how the parenting time has been reduced for father from the original order?
So the parents kind of verbally, from my understanding, the parents had verbally made these decisions to slowly reduce father's parenting time, but it wasn't fully written in an order. There was no new order. They had the original decree, and now this April 2022 order is the latest with the parenting time. Father, based on this April order, father has no holidays. Father has been reduced on quality parenting time, not just quantity of parenting time. And I think that reduction was not reviewed with findings to explain why such a reduction should happen. We have
Can I ask you, just comparing the, apart from the verbal agreements that you're talking about, if we look at the original judgment decree parenting time, and then we look what happened in this order that's under review, and this order under review put time frames around the, I think there's every other, apart from the summer, et cetera, it addresses in the order every other week during this, there would be a Wednesday from this time to that, and then every other weekend. What's the change there?
The biggest change is that father has lost holidays, has lost significant time. They used to work together on dealing with those issues. But my understanding of the decree now is father has the minimum, and it might be slightly under the minimum, but I think we're right on that 25%.
And where does the current order address or remove holidays? Can you point that out to me?
It says father, so it says that the relocation is granted, and then it specifically says father's parenting time is every other weekend starting 6 p.m. on Friday night through 6 p.m. on Sunday. He shall have also one overnight per week on Wednesday starting at 6 p.m. through the start of school the next morning. There is nothing underneath the order that says anything that isn't changed in this prior order remains in effect. So therefore, his parenting time now has been restricted solely to just this time that's listed in the April order.
Okay, so your position is that this, the order, notwithstanding what it said in the conclusion law, I'm just going over for a moment, which above it, which says maintaining the parenting time, your view is that the only time is that in one, and there's no different summer time and there's no holiday time. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, because the way that this order is written, that would be have to be the interpretation. Otherwise, there needed to be a separate part of the order or even within the parenting time paragraph in two. And I see my time is
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, if you could introduce yourself and a party you represent for the record.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Smith, and I represent the respondent, Sandy Scruggs Goldsmith, in this appeal. Appellant essentially makes two arguments on appeal, both of which elevate form over substance, and both of which this court should refuse to accept. The first is that the district court abused its discretion when it granted respondent's motion to move the child's residence to another state, because the district court failed to make explicit written findings regarding the factors it's required to consider under Minnesota statute section 518.175 subdivision 3B. The second is that the district court abused its discretion when it reduced his parenting time. Appellant's first argument is flawed for two reasons. First, as the court has indicated, the plain and unambiguous language of section 518.175 subdivision 3B does not require the district court to address and make detailed findings on each of the listed factors in its order. Instead, the plain language of the statute provides only that the district court must consider the listed factors when determining whether a proposed move to another state is in the child's best interest. In Hansen versus Todnum, the Supreme Court held that similar language in subdivision 8 of section 518.175 does not require detailed, specific findings on each of the listed factors. This court should follow the Supreme Court's lead and refuse appellant's invitation to add a requirement to make specific and detailed findings to subdivision 3B that the legislature clearly did not intend to include in the statutory language. As the Supreme Court pointed out, when the legislature desires to require explicit and detailed findings on best interest factors, it knows how to do so, and it does so.
Mr. Smith, you would agree that 518.175 subdivision 3 requires the district court to consider the enunciated factors, right?
Yes, certainly.
So what are we to do with the fact that the district court did not cite that statute in its order and instead cited 518.17 subdivision 1A?
I think what we need to do then is look to the substance of the district court's best interest findings that it did make. And I think when we look there, they amply demonstrate that it considered those factors.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if they did, then can you point us to the places in the order where they did, in fact, consider the specific factors that opposing counsel called out as not having been addressed? And I think that was 3, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Certainly. I certainly disagree that they didn't cover factor 3 that's addressed in the best interest findings in paragraph I, which is on page 4 of the district court's order. And I also disagree with counsel's interpretation of what that factor requires. It does absolutely center on the feasibility. That the feasibility is the practical ability to maintain the relationship. And if we're focused on relocation, that's about logistics. And it in fact goes on to say, the feasibility of preserving the relationship between the non-relocating parent and the child through suitable parenting time arrangements, considering the logistics and financial circumstances of the parties. The district court addressed that substantively in paragraph I, identifying the fact that one, the minor child is close to getting her driver's license. She's able to drive to, so will soon be able to drive to appellant's home for parenting time. And that the fact that the respondent agreed to do all of the transportation to and from the appellant's parenting time for both the weekday and the weekend parenting time during the school year. So that absolutely does address the feasibility of preserving the relationship through the through suitable parenting time arrangements. So that's been addressed there. With regard to factor five, that is addressed in best interest finding paragraph K on page five, is specifically in light of the appellant's contention that the respondent was alienating the child. The court found that there is no evidence that the respondent is trying to thwart the relationship between appellant and the child. And in fact has actively tried to promote it. So I think the substance of that is absolutely addressed there. With regard to finding six, I think that's just that. I think that's addressed generally. The court concluded that the relocation certainly would have limited impact on the child, although it doesn't use the specific words of general quality of life. I think that generally the findings address that and in the court's conclusion that this would not adversely impact the child. Factor seven, the reasons for each person for seeking or opposing the relocation. I would point the court to paragraph three and paragraphs three of the general findings of fact, and then best interest findings paragraphs C and H for that analysis. And finally, factor eight is not applicable here. There's no allegation of domestic abuse. That's clear from the record, and it's irrelevant. And it was similarly irrelevant under the general best interest findings. And I think the court, that's paragraph D, whether there's domestic abuse, this factor does not apply. The district court found that there. So I think what's abundantly clear is that the district court carefully considered the evidence in front of it. It considered the substance of the best interest factors that it's required to consider when allowing the child to move out of state. It's understandable, I think, that it did so in the context of the broader best interest factors, because it was analyzing those with regard to the motion for a modification in parenting time that appellant brought. To require it to break out a separate analysis would foster judicial inefficiency. The district court carefully and thoughtfully considered the evidence presented to it. It made detailed findings of fact that stretch over three pages, and it did not abuse its discretion when it made those findings. Appellant hasn't alleged that any of those findings are clearly erroneous, which he would have to do to challenge the substance of them, and he has not done so here. He's accordingly waived any argument that those findings are erroneous on the basis of them not being supported by the record. Thank you. Thank you for the question. I hope that's helpful for the court in its consideration of that issue. If there are no more immediate questions on that, I'll move on to the second argument appellant makes, that the district court abused its discretion when it reduced his parent time without making findings addressing the statutory presumption. This argument likewise suffers from a fundamental and fatal flaw: the fact that the district court simply did not reduce his parenting time. Counsel suggests that because the order only says the parenting time shall be
on Wednesdays overnight and every other weekend during the school year, that's a reduction. But that is reading the order in isolation, one, with the discussion at the hearing and the focus of the party's arguments, and two, in a way that conflicts with the district court's conclusion of law, is hyper-formalistic. And is not in accord with the district court's intent. The district court obviously had no intention of removing the appellant's holiday or summertime. That wasn't even discussed at the hearing. And again, the conclusion of law says that the child's best interests are served by maintaining the parenting time schedule that has obtained for 13 years. That schedule included holidays and significant summertime. The appellant has every other week during the summer, effectively. So there is no reduction in parenting time, and the district court therefore did not err when it didn't address the factors that would apply to a reduction in the parenting time below the presumption. And there's case law that I cited in my brief that's not directly kind of on point, because the difference here is between a conclusion of law and an order, but it does support the notion that when there's a conclusion of law that clearly expresses the district court's intent, it's not appropriate to read other portions of the order in a way that's inconsistent or frustrates that intent. And reading the order as appellant proposes would clearly frustrate the manifest intent of the district court to maintain the status quo, and in hopes that the appellant and the child can recover and rebuild their relationship.
Would you agree that if, just hypothetically, if every holiday next year fell on a weekend that he had the child or a Wednesday, that would prohibit mother from having any holiday time? Or sorry, other parent. I think I'm confusing the parties.
No, I wouldn't agree, because the order's intent is to maintain the parenting time schedule that was set.
Right. I'm saying if we were to agree with opposing counsel's interpretation of the order, and that were the case, then we would be reading it that narrowly.
I suppose yes, that would be the way to read it. Especially because then the order doesn't address what happens if there's a conflict between ordinary parenting time and holiday parenting time. It's simply unreasonable to read an order that modifies only a portion as completely abrogating the rest of the established parenting time schedule, especially when there's a conclusion of law that says maintaining the established parenting time schedule that's obtained for 13 years is in the child's best interests. That, again, I think just requires this court to close its eyes to reality and to what the district court was clearly doing when it issued this order. If there are no more questions from the panel, I would simply reiterate that the district court here did not abuse its discretion when it granted the motion to move the child's residence to another state and denied appellant's motion to increase his parenting time. It simply maintained the status quo. And for that reason, the respondent respectfully asked this court to affirm the district court's order in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll reset the clock and then we'll be ready for rebuttal. Okay. Counsel for appellant.
Thank you. So to further answer the question that was kind of addressed to me prior to rebuttal starting, what was outlined in the original divorce decree says that my client, the appellant, would be granted reasonable and liberal parenting time with the party's children. It didn't go into school very, very much, and then had an additional summer and holiday schedule that is discussed. And while the conclusion of law says that it is in the best interest to maintain the parenting time schedule, what the order actually does is very specific. It doesn't say during the school or outline anything other than father shall have parenting time. That is his parenting time. To say that we need to look outside the plain language of what was written by the judge is to, again, impose and interpret things that are outside of what the judge did. The judge was very clear. That,
counsel, the original order called for such parenting time shall include for respondent, two weekends per month, etc. We'll have parenting time, and additionally, she'll have midweek parenting time every Wednesday, commencing when the respondent picks the children up after school and ending the following day. And then next paragraph, shall enjoy parenting time during the summer to consist of 2 weeks during the month, etc. It expressly talked about school year weekends and Wednesdays, and then expressly talks about summer. And I presume, keep going. It has holidays. So here, what it appears to me, what happened here, the difference and why, I mean, a reasonable reading of this, and maybe the only reasonable reading, is paragraph two put a time frame around the Wednesday start because there would be no father would no longer be picking up the child at school. Instead, there's going to be a transportation of the child to start then at 6 p.m. on Wednesdays. So, I mean, it seems to change, like it adds times. I understand why it did that, why there's a time frame attached to it, but it doesn't seem to change the days.
I would disagree, Your Honor. Further in that paragraph where you're discussing school, it says, additionally, respondents shall have midweek parenting time one other evening per week as agreed upon by the parties, such parenting time to commence when the respondent picks the children up after school and ending at 7 p.m. Again, we are...
agreed upon by the parties, there would be, that's what that order said, there would be one other time as agreed, one other day as agreed upon by the parties from 3 to 7. I agree.
That is correct.
That was in the original order. And this order, it wasn't an overnight. And I agree. But I don't really see how that gets to your summer and holidays and why there's a reduction. I agree that it changes the school year. But that's the order. I mean, as agreed upon was also in that original language. I don't know if that's agreed upon anymore. But it seems like a stretch to say that this, like the argument that it abrogates the other provisions of the original order with respect to holidays and summer.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. If it didn't do that, then it needed to say this would be the summer or this would be the school year schedule. Because by saying you shall have parenting time, you are creating a schedule for solely the parenting time in which he has to create an interpretation that, well, the court didn't mean these other parenting time schedule would be creating an interpretation that the judge didn't put in there, because the court is allowed and does on significant amount of orders. Most courts say anything that hasn't been modified by this order shall remain, the prior order shall remain in place.
What do we do with conclusion of law number two? It's in the best interest of the child to maintain a parenting time schedule that's been in place for the past 13 years. Do we just then, you're talking about we can't read anything in. Do we read that out?
I'm not saying you're reading it out. I think the court was finding that it was in the best interest that the parents were following a schedule that had been in place in 13 years. But then the court found the parenting time needs to be this. Now, maybe there was an artful, but the conclusion of law is not the order and vice versa. And I see I'm about to run out of time. The point that happened is there was a restriction made. And I see I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate arguments from both of you. The case is submitted and we'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. Thank you.
Thank you.